Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Drop us a text or a voicemail at 331-979-1369. Whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, hit us up. Text messages and voicemails. We'll get to those on Wednesday's episode mailbag every single week. So once again, 331-979-1369. Matt, welcome back from the weekend. Well, that was a little bit of a wake-up call for Bulls fans who were riding high, and we were riding high a little bit. It was nice to see the Bulls go on a little bit of a win streak, play a little bit better, but certainly the Pistons playing as well as they were this over the last 10 games or so. They brought us back down to earth, but how you doing? How's the weekend for you? And hopefully you didn't feel too bad about both of those Pistons losses.
Are you kidding me? What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? I feel great. I feel great about those losses. Hey, guess what? Hawks pulled off a win. Suns pulled off a win. 14% still in play. Got a little bit larger of a buffer back. Pushing off Atlanta to stay at 4 at the very worst in those lottery standings. And I'm not giving up on that top three yet. It can still happen. That's obviously one side of the story. I was a little bit discouraged and disappointed that the Bulls couldn't get that win on Friday night, especially considering how well they played in the first half of that game. I was saying it on Outsiders, like, that was probably some of the best basketball I've seen the Bulls play all season long, was the first half of that Friday night game. The ball was moving. It was fluid offense. Everybody was knocking down their shots. Everybody was making the right reads and the right plays. LaVine was aggressively attacking the basket, getting to the rim at will. Markkanen was doing great things. He was, using opportunities when he had mismatches. He was doing work in the post. He was knocking down shots. And Otto Porter was looking like the huge missing piece that we have come to think of him as since coming into the fold. It was all going great. And then they just kind of let off a little bit. Really ugly third quarter. Offensive execution stalled a bit. Defensively, I think they got a little lazy. They really just got worked by Griffin and Andre Drummond. And then, of course, the fourth quarter was the Blake Griffin show. But even before Griffin really took over in the latter stages of that fourth quarter Friday night, you saw a really, a moment where Boylan's decisions as far as his rotation really bit the Bulls, because he let the Bulls' second unit start that fourth quarter, the entire second unit, including Felicio, who almost never gets runs other than his one stint of the game where he bridges the first and second quarter. That is really, I think, what buried the Bulls in that game. And it was kind of a letdown considering they were playing so well that they had a 20-point lead on, as you said, one of the hottest teams in the NBA. So for them to cough that up and lose that game, kind of disappointing. But you know how I feel about the Bulls racking up losses right now.
It was a tale of two halves, and felt like even Sunday's game, too, kind of felt the same way, even without Zach LaVine. It was like Sunday matinee game, both teams kind of looked out of it. And even then, like in that first half, the Bulls were still in the game, even missing one of their best scorers. But going back to this first game, yeah, that first half was probably one of the most sound halves we've seen from the Bulls. Thanks to Otto Porter, too. Without him in that second quarter, man, when the Bulls subbed him back in after that 8 minutes, I'm pretty sure he was involved in almost every play through those first 4 minutes he subbed back in at the 8 minute marker. Like, the Pistons called two timeouts, and legitimately, you go back to the play by play. Otto Porter had a hand in almost every single one of those plays. Like, the Pistons had to keep calling timeouts to figure out what the hell, how do we stop Otto Porter from disrupting everything we're trying to do here? I'm looking at it right now, the breakdown. Otto Porter played 8 minutes and 16 seconds of that second quarter. He was a plus 17. He went 5 for 6. He had 4 assists, a rebound, and a steal. That is ridiculous in that second quarter, and he was a large part of why the Bulls went on an 18-0 run and an 11-2 run to finish up that second quarter. So it was huge props to him. But then, like you said, they went into the half, came out, and then laid a massive goose egg in the second half, and it was like all of a sudden they forgot that the Pistons can play halfway decent basketball. They've got Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, and then those two guys absolutely took a shit on the Bulls. And before you knew it, this game was wrapped up and game over. Pistons win. And then you get Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and Lauri Markkanen sitting on the bench looking like they just got all of their Christmas presents completely destroyed on Christmas Day, and they have no idea what just happened. So
yeah, I mean, it was hard to see. I know exactly that that shot of those three guys that you're referring to, which happened late in the game. I think it was Boylan's final timeout when there was under a minute left and the Bulls were down 9. The game was essentially over. But at least it was like they were dejected and looking pissed off because they had just coughed up a game that they knew they could have had, maybe even should have had, as opposed to, like, we saw a very similar picture in, I want to say, like, mid to late December, when this Bulls team was just god-awful. Boylan had slowed the offense down. The Bulls were getting blown out by 20 every night. And it was, you know, a picture speaks a thousand words, sure. And they looked very upset Friday night. But they looked upset because this was a team that had started to turn things around and was probably feeling themselves a little bit after playing so well in that first half and building such a big lead on a very good Pistons team, only to blow it all away. And, you know, of course, that's going to be frustrating for these guys because, you know, as a portion of the fan base, at least, is just trying to ride out the rest of the season with as many losses as possible because everybody's starting to look towards the draft. These players do want to win, and Jim Boylan does want to win. Some people saying maybe it was a masterful tank job, the way that Boylan kind of messed with his rotation a little bit and let his second unit guys start that fourth quarter. I don't know about that. I don't know if I'm buying that. I honestly think that Boylan and his players are still playing to win games because they want to see those improvements. So to lose a game like that, you know, that's got to hurt. But at least as a fan, you could say, all right, well, these guys do care. And they like winning, and losing in that fashion definitely got them all pissed off. Because, I mean, if we're being honest, they shouldn't have lost that game. I know the Bulls bench is really thin right now. The second unit, there's not a whole lot of scoring options anywhere on the floor. And that's really what doomed them and led to them coughing up that lead. But, I mean, you got a 20-point lead, you should keep it. You know, simple as that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the Bulls were up 21 at one point in this game. And it goes back to the rotations too, Matt. You had talked about it. I'm kind of confused as why Boylan stuck with the starters as long as he did in that third quarter going into the second half. Like, just looking at the breakdown of what they were doing, it's almost like he said, okay, these guys played a great second quarter. Let's just see if we can build on that momentum going into the third. The Pistons came out of the locker room, and they kind of switched things up. They're like, okay, we're going to run a little bit differently. We're going to bring our starters back out, but we're also going to switch it up, see if our bench can run something different. And sure enough, they were able to do that. Luke Kennard came off the bench and just absolutely started to light it up. Langston Galloway, man, like, was this the weekend of Langston Galloway? Was that what we were seeing this weekend?
I guess. Dude, he went between Friday and Sunday 9 for 9 behind the three-point line. What kind of sorcery is that?
Unbelievable, man. I mean, he was part of the reason why the Bulls were getting destroyed, and it was, you know, he was doing the, was it Sunday he was doing the shrug at one point? Like, It looked like he wasn't even realizing how many of these shots were going in. He had 17 points on Friday night, and he dropped in another 15 Sunday afternoon. It's just, it was ridiculous. And then also, too, we talked about Luke Kennard on Friday's episode real fast, but we said the dude was shooting almost 50% from three on five attempts. He did it again on Friday nights, and it was like he was getting anywhere and everywhere on the floor in that second half, and he was scoring lights out. And then, you know, the Bulls' second units, that bench unit, seemingly struggled to find any type of battle back, you know, dogging it, Jim Boylan-ish philosophy, any of this mentality to try to claw back into any of this games. And by the time the Bulls starters could get back into this game, it's like the Pistons had all the momentum. Bulls starters came back into the game, and by that time, it's like the Bulls starters couldn't get anything going. And Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond, all of the Pistons starters just continued to rain on the Bulls starters, and it was like at that point, they're hitting every shot imaginable, and the Bulls couldn't get anything going.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was overall bench points Friday night, 38-19 in favor of Detroit. So they literally doubled up the Bulls bench, which when Archie Diacono gets you 9 points off your bench and that is your highest bench score, it's not going to go well when you're trying to have that second unit protect the lead. And then Sunday, because LaVine was resting and it seems very just precautionary, his patellar tendon or whatever it was Sunday, that they decide to hold him out. You bring Archie into your starting lineup, and then your bench scoring gets even weaker. Like, yeah, Seldon put up 18, Shaq had 11 in yesterday's loss, but and Blakeney had 9. Blakeney didn't even get into the game until like I think late third quarter when this game was already decided. So those are garbage time bench points, which is not the same as actually having your second unit play evenly with your opponent's second unit, protecting a lead or protecting what is a close game. So the game when the Bulls actually had a shot to win, because they weren't missing Zach LaVine and they had a lead to work with, the bench just ghosted. And then in a meaningless, in meaningless minutes Sunday, when you don't have Zach LaVine, the bench actually put up more points, but they were garbage points. They didn't matter. Because guess what? This Pistons team, everybody, of course, primary concern is trying to figure out a way to slow down Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond. They failed to do that, but at least the Bulls starting unit played fairly well in both of these games and certainly played well on Friday. But when your second unit is that shallow, like that's a deciding factor in plenty of games, because this Pistons bench is pretty deep right now.
Another thing I noticed too is in Friday night's game especially is in the first half, the Bulls scored 42 points in the paint in that first half to the Pistons 22. The Bulls were dominating in the paint. And then they went away from that. They either went away from that or the Pistons started to play defense. And the Bulls couldn't find any way to score in the paint. You look at where the Bulls and the Pistons ended up with points in the paint to finish the game. The Pistons ended up with 54 points in the paint and the Bulls ended up with 62. So for the Pistons to start with the first half with only 22 points in the paint and finish with 54, the Pistons were dominating. Like Andre Drummond, with the amount of points he had in the second half, same thing with Blake Griffin. Those two dudes dominated in that second half. And the Bulls just looked, man, they looked tired. They looked tired in that second half. Robin Lopez looked like he had bricks on the end of his feet at the end of that game. And that might have been caused by having to play all of that second quarter, going into the third quarter, having to play all those minutes in the third quarter too. It just seemed like all of a sudden Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond kind of took advantage of a little bit of confusion, a little bit of lack of energy, a little bit of tiredness from both Lowry Markin and Robin Lopez, and you just started to see a little bit of things starting to get exposed. So I was a little bit surprised by that, just considering the fact that the Bulls had been a top team over the last 10 games in points in the paint, and as opposed to their opponents' points in the paint, the Bulls they completely disappeared in that second half, and that was a huge factor in why the Bulls couldn't score. They couldn't get anything going.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about outscoring opponents in the paint, it seems like that's certainly become a primary goal for Jim Boylan, and Robin Lopez has been having probably his best stretch in a Bulls jersey in over the last month or so because of that. And credit to Rolo, he stepped up his offensive arsenal. He's showing us a lot of capability to score inside, and that's all fine and well, but it's not enough on the average night to win you a game just by outscoring your opponent in the paint, because there are other facets to a game, and especially these days in the NBA, a hot quarter from behind the three-point line can immediately nullify that. And that's the really upsetting part about the loss Friday night in particular, and why it felt like a win that the Bulls just let slip away, is that the Pistons didn't really have that great of a night as far as shooting the ball. Like, yeah, Galloway and Kennard combined to hit a handful of threes, but the Pistons overall, 9 of 27, 33%, not that great. But then you go look to the Bulls, who shot 5 of 17 from behind the three-point line, not even 30%, and that was their third straight game where they were just absolute garbage behind the three-point line. So as much as Jim loves outscoring his opponents in the paint, it's not as efficient and not as effective as outscoring your opponents behind the three-point line. And that, like, the other area where the Bulls could have capitalized, if you look at free throws attempted versus free throws made, the Pistons had 13 of 21, so not a great night from the free throw line, 62%. The Bulls, 15 of 23. They had a bunch of guys split a pair at the line, but really, like, the worst is Zach LaVine getting to the free throw line 10 times and only hitting 5 of them. If LaVine makes all those free throws, if the Bulls do a better job at the free throw line, maybe they win that game. So, like, yes, outscoring your opponents in the paint is good, and Robin Lopez is doing a good job of making that part of what the Bulls are trying to do right now. But it's only one facet of the game. And getting to the free throw line is great, but getting to the free throw line is not as great if you can't make your free throws. And for the love of God, that stretch of games where the Bulls, I think they combined to go like 5 of 50 or 10 of 50 from behind the three-point line in this recent stretch. It's gross. It's gross, and hopefully it's just a lull that they're going to pick themselves out of. But you're not going to win a whole lot of games when you're only making 4, 5, or 6 threes in a game.
Yeah, and I mean, you talked about it too, is that's one element of this Bulls team, and surprisingly enough, over this stretch, it's would you say it's kind of why the Bulls have been sort of decent, is because they've found that element of being able to dominate teams in the paint? It's like a lot of teams have kind of gone away from that element of the game, and while teams have tried to combat that, and while Robin Lopez has been playing so ridiculously well and been able to be a scoring factor underneath, it's kind of opened up everything else from the perimeter, and Otto Porter's helped out there, and he's been shooting lights out from three. Same thing with Lowry and Zach. They've opened things up as well. But this was a case, too, is like Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin kind of mirrored that in that second half for the Pistons. And another point, too, is when the bench came in that start of that fourth quarter, Wayne Seldon had to guard Blake Griffin. And on a couple possessions, he shut him down, too. Blake Griffin kept getting the ball back and the ball back and the ball back, and Wayne Seldon shut him down. But then it was kicked out to Langston Galloway. Sure enough, Langston Galloway hits back-to-back threes. Then Wayne Seldon tries to go over, cover Langston Galloway, kicks out to Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin knocks down a couple shots. And then it kicks back to Langston Galloway. Sure enough, Langston Galloway's hot. He hits down another three. It was a pylon effect. And when Wayne Seldon's that can guard, it makes things a little bit difficult. And by the time the starters subbed back in, well, then you saw what happened. So, I mean, Andre Drummond was taking advantage of Cristiano Felicio, your rim protector on the floor, for 4 minutes to start the fourth quarter. So, and let's just go straight at those guys. And that's what they did in the second half. And that's why Andre Drummond had, 25 points and Blake Griffin had 19? And that was it.
And in particular, in the fourth quarter, when the Pistons were putting things away, it was just the Blake Griffin show. And he was just getting buckets inside at will. I mean, and credit to Blake Griffin, who I think just kind of has gotten glossed over this year as far as the big stars in the league.
Man, he's
but
good.
He is just, you know, he is insane. I just saw something scroll, you know, and through my Twitter feed just a second ago. I think it was from Bleacher Report talking about the numbers that Drummond and Blake Griffin have put up over, like, you know, like since the All-Star break. And it's insane. Like, they are playing great basketball. Blake Griffin, I think, has really developed his ball handling ability to a point where you were seeing moves from him over the course of these two games, Friday and Sunday, where he can put the ball on the floor, he can cross over, he can go baseline, he can spin, he can do all these things. And, you know, Markkanen was one that I recall getting cooked a couple of times. And, you know, poor kid, he's still learning. He's still trying to improve on that defensive side of his game. But, like, nobody on this Bulls team could slow down Blake Griffin. Nobody. And some of that's a credit to Blake. And I, you know, and that was why a lot of the time over the course of Friday night's game and Sunday afternoon's game, I was just thinking to myself, man, I miss Wendell Carter Jr. Like, he's not going to be a fix-all when he comes back for this Bulls defense. But when we talk about just how easily penetrable this Bulls defense has been all season long, and especially since Wendell went down, like, he's not going to fix everything. Markkanen needs to get better. LaVine needs to get better on that end of the floor. And we have seen both of them make some strides and make some efforts to be better. But Wendell, I mean, my goodness. Just to have another shot blocker in there, just to have a rim protector, a guy that will make people think twice about trying to put the ball on the floor and attack the basket like that, because it was too easy for Drummond and Blake over the weekend. What's up, Locked On Bulls listeners? This is Matt here with a word from our latest sponsor, King Wipes. King Wipes will change your life. They've changed mine. I'm not kidding. I'm not a guy who uses a lot of products and toiletries. I'm pretty simple. I got a stick of deodorant. I got 2-in-1 shampoo, conditioner. I got body wash. And I got toothpaste. That's it. I'm very simple when it comes to taking care of my body and what people call manscaping these days. But I swear, King Wipes will change your life. Wipes at a new level of clean that is just not possible with dry toilet paper. Think about it. If you spill peanut butter on the counter, do you wipe it up with a dry paper towel? Or after digging in your yard, do you come in and wipe your hands with a dry napkin before eating? Every man is the king of his castle, and that includes, that's right, that porcelain throne. Make the most of your throne time with large, luxurious wipes that are biodegradable and infused with aloe vera to keep it all soft and clean. Have you ever been stuck at the stadium, on the road, at the office, or in a dingy dive bar with nothing but receipts and $30 bills? Keeping King Wipes in your pocket can really save your butt. They're available in both a 48-count home throne pouch and individually wrapped wipes for those on-the-go moments in life. King Wipes make every flush a royal flush. And our Locked On Bulls listeners right now can visit kingwipes.com and enter Locked On 15 to save 15% on all purchases. That's kingwipes.com, Locked On 15 promo code for 15% off all your purchases. They're also available for purchase on Amazon. Remember, King Wipes are for the Duke in all of us. Your throne awaits. Go take it.
Going back to something that you had said previously was about Zach LaVine and his struggles recently at the free throw line. I don't know what's been up, but it seems like now it's gotten to a point where I think it's just in his head. It seems like he's been thinking about it way too much at this point. It's not that he's a bad free throw shooter. I think this is just kind of one of those things that he's got the yips. It's like now it's a psychological thing at this point. It's like he's thinking about it way too much. And like this is uncharacteristic for Zach LaVine. Like, Zach LaVine doesn't miss free throw shots at this high of a rate. Like, over the last five games coming into Sunday's game, actually, he was shooting 66.7% from the free throw line, which is uncharacteristic for Zach LaVine. So you think this is just kind of a mental game and something that he's struggling with more so than him actually just being a bad free throw shooter?
Yeah, I think it's something more along those lines. And I mean, the thing that I think about is maybe, it's not something I enjoy thinking about, and I don't want it to be true, but to me, the other element of Zach's game where we have seen him have what could only be described as the yips is his ball handling late in games and in crunch time moments. Because that is something that we have, and actually, we had one of our stats people at NBC go back and look at it over the weekend, because we were bringing it up. Like, there was another instance where LaVine had the ball, and it wasn't end of game. I think it was like end of half or end of one of the quarters, where shot clock is off. LaVine's got the ball in his hands, and I just said kind of sarcastically, like, oh, well, we know what's coming here. Zach's going to lose the ball, or he's going to dribble the ball off his foot or whatever. Because it seems like we've seen those moments happen so many times this season, almost inexplicably. And sure enough, he dribbled the ball away from himself. And I was like, all right, this isn't just a weird coincidence, or I don't know what's going on, but the stats back it up. It was like something crazy, like in the final minute of quarters, Zach LaVine dribbling as the ball handler, number of times he gets the ball pickpocketed, number of times he loses the ball, number of times he loses the ball while going up for a shot, number of times where it's more than 50%. Over the entire course of the season, LaVine loses the ball more often than gets up a shot when he is in those situations. So to me, that is another part of Zach's game that this season has felt like the yips to me. Like, why is it that when the Bulls have the ball, LaVine has the ball, in a clock running down situation, he seems to lose the ball half the time? And like I said, we had a stats person check, and my instinct was true. My gut feeling was true. So I don't know what that is, and I don't know if there's any correlation between that kind of yips and what we've seen from him at the free throw line recently. All I know is that I don't like any of it. I hope whatever it is, Zach figures it out, but he certainly seems to be, right now, a player who is fighting that kind of stuff.
And we've talked about cases where that's happened throughout the season. You know, you're thinking so much about and visualizing so much about what should be happening next that you forget about what you're supposed to be doing in that very moment. And we've seen cases happen like that all season long. So I don't think the free throw thing is anything to be worried about. I think this is just a case where this happens to guys all the time too. Like, guys to go through slumps and they'll figure it out. So this just reminds me too, in baseball, guys go through slumps all the time with their swings, and guys go through instances where they just can't seem to get the bat on the ball for the life of them. They go through strikeouts, slumps where they go through 100 at bats and they can't seem to do anything. They try to change it up. They think way too much about it. And sometimes all you have to do is just sit back and relax. And that first time where you start to, where it starts to click, and that's when you get it back. And so maybe Zach's got to just take a little bit of pressure off himself and just go to the free throw line and just shoot and just be normal. And it's easier said than done, but I think he's putting too much pressure on himself and thinking a little bit too much at the free throw line when he steps up. So this is uncharacteristic for him, though.
I think you're right. Maybe he's putting a little too much pressure on himself as far as the yips when it comes to losing the ball in those, clock running down moments. Some of it's that. Some of it could be the fact that I have expressed, and I think you would share the opinion that we still see Zach LaVine as a guy who needs to develop his basketball IQ and make better decisions in those moments. And that's not like a huge knock on Zach. It's just saying he's still a young guy. He probably had more of those moments on his plate this season than at any time ever before in his career back in Minnesota, when he was playing behind Wiggins and Towns as far as usage and being that guy in late game situations. So there is that. And then when it comes to the recent little slide on at the free throw line, I'm not really concerned about that right now, because if you go look at his numbers, he is a pretty good free throw shooter career wise. He's 82.5 for his career in the NBA right now at the free throw line, and this season even a little higher than that, 83.3. So that I think is something that he can work his way out of, and let's just hope it doesn't turn into a LeBron thing where we all thought that LeBron just had these down moments and these yips at the free throw line, when in reality we have learned now over his 15-year NBA season, or 16, going on 16 seasons now, that LeBron's just not a very good free throw shooter. And hopefully this is not that, because you want your stars and your highest scoring players and your players with the ability to get to the free throw line, like Zach LaVine is, to shoot to shoot their free throws at a very efficient rate. 83 that he's shooting this year ain't bad. You would like it to be even higher than that, you know, getting closer to that 90 mark that some of the best scorers in the league, like Kevin Durant, also are those, you know, career 90% free throw shooters. But, you know, if it's hovering in the low 80s right now, I'm okay with that. It can't fall below 80, because then you have a real problem, because then you're talking about getting to the free throw line and not taking advantage of that, which is what happened to LaVine on Friday night.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, because you think about it, the way LaVine's kind of transformed his game is going to the basket and drawing fouls and using that as a way to be a primary right. scorer, as opposed to what we initially thought he was going to be, is kind of a guy that's going to pop and shoot and be more of a dominant three-point shooter. If he's going to continue to be sort of that James Harden factor, is go and draw and take somewhere between 8 and 12 free throws a game, he's got to be an 80% or better free throw shooter.
Right. Like LaVine's free throw percentage, vastly more important than, say, Chris Dunn's, who, you know, if there's something I have just completely given no mind to, do not care about. Right now, if you were to ask me, about any of the various storylines and player development that's gone on this season with the Bulls, Chris Dunn's free throw percentage would probably be at the very bottom of the list. Because guess what? It doesn't matter, because he doesn't get to the free throw line. You want your guys who can get to the free throw line to be great free throw shooters. Which, you know, to me, that was the other story of the weekend, is two more pretty blah games from Chris Dunn, especially considering LaVine was absent Sunday. I was kind of hoping that Dunn would seize that opportunity, and he really didn't. But did you see those free throw numbers from Chris Dunn that Mark Stroutman of NBC put out there Friday? This was yesterday, during yesterday's game, Jordan?
Yeah, I saw them. I saw the box score breakdowns for each game.
Yeah, and just in case our viewers didn't see it, let me just give it to you real quick. Since February 1st, Chris Dunn, the Bulls' starting point guard, has attempted 9 free throws in 416 minutes. 9! You know, just by comparison, TLC, a half-season loner bench player who isn't good and will be gone, has attempted 13 free throws in 222 minutes. More free throws in half the minutes for a completely nondescript bench player. And then, as a follow-up to that, Chris Dunn's free throw attempts by game in all of those games since February 1st. 0-0-4-0-0-0-0-2-2-0-1-0-0-0.
2-4-9-5-6-7-8.
How the hell does your starting point guard have free throw attempt numbers like that? That sound like binary.
Man, that's bad. Yeah, just kind of adding on to that, Matt. Chris Dunn's taken 125 field goal attempts too during that span in 14 games, 416 minutes, 125 field goal attempts, and only 9 free throw attempts. I mean, that's something that that was a pressing thing, right? That was something that was asked of him last year from John Paxson, was to get to the rim better and to try to draw fouls. Like, at this point, mm-hmm. man, this isn't even going to be something I harp on him for, because it's probably 5th or 6th on the list at this point of things that I need to see him improve on. Like, the offense I could give a shit less about now. It's about being able to run the offense. Like, be able to pass and facilitate at this point, if you're going to stick with this team any longer. Mm-hmm. Like, I could care less about the offense at this point. I want you to be able to pass and get the ball to Zach and Lowry and Otto. Like, that's what I care about at this point, because the offense, it is what it is, right? It is what it is. He's a guy that's going to take 14-foot jumpers, and a guy that maybe he'll get to the rim once in a while. He's trying to shoot threes, but it's not really working that well. And you know what? Credit to him, he's trying to take more threes, it's not really working. Since February 1st, he's taken 36 three-point attempts, and he's shooting 33%. I could care less about the offense at this point. It's not really working. So I don't know what to say about Chris Dunn.
No, and that's why, like, if what all we wanted him to do was be a facilitator, pass-first point guard, to help LaVine and Markkanen be the primary scorers on this team. And that's, I think, kind of where you and I were hoping he would go, if not turning himself into a versatile scoring point guard who could also pass this season, which clearly is just not a reality at this point. I think the other really telling thing is that way more so than Chris Dunn has ever looked to be able to improve and help the offensive developments of Markkanen and LaVine is what bringing Otto Porter into the fold has done comparatively. LaVine and Markkanen's games have soared since Otto Porter arrived. Otto Porter, not just with his ability to space the floor as a three-point threat, which Chris Dunn is not, which certainly helps in one facet, but the other facet that, to me, Otto Porter is also a wildly better passing player than Chris Dunn. He's not a point guard, per se. He's a wing, but he has better floor vision. He has the ability to make smarter decisions when moving the ball one more time is the correct option, or he sees an opportunity for a backdoor cut pass or a bounce pass or a big pass down court. He gets his eyes up. He gets the ball up court. Like Otto Porter has shown us all of those things that Chris Dunn has not shown us, and he's not even a point guard. But Otto, between that and his three-point shooting, has helped LaVine and Markkanen way more than Chris Dunn has. You can't debate that. The eye test is there, and when you look at what Otto has done for this Bulls team as far as their offensive efficiency since he arrived, when you look at his assist numbers, when he's not essentially your primary pass-first point guard kind of player, it's still like Otto's racking up more assists than Chris Dunn.
I'm curious, have we dropped our expectation level at all for Chris Dunn yet, or are we still putting our expectation level at the same, in the same category as Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., and the rest of the core that we originally had at the beginning of the season for all of them? And that's not just for you. That's not a question just for you. It's for the rest of our Bulls fans out there that are listening. Has anybody dropped their expectation level in terms of the way that they've been watching him over the last month, 2 months?
I mean, based on some of the content in our text and voicemail box, I would say yes. I think a lot of Bulls fans have dropped their expectations. Because I don't know about you, Jordan, but I had, I wouldn't necessarily say high hopes, but like, I was optimistic about Dunn coming into this season. Hopefully having a healthy year, playing close to 82 games, and proving to us that he could develop some chemistry with LaVine and Markkanen. Because I knew that those two guys were more important than Chris Dunn was when it came to who are going to be the best players on this team. But he hasn't shown us that. And it seems like recently there's been this trend among Bulls Twitter and our Bulls conversations and our text line talking about, well, maybe Chris Dunn isn't our starting point guard of the future, but maybe he can be a good backup in this league. And, you know, I don't necessarily even want to get into that conversation about whether or not the Bulls should keep Dunn as a backup point guard moving forward. But I think that tells you right there that, yes, of course, the expectations for Dunn have shifted over the course of this season. They have dropped significantly.
I ask that question because it seems like people just grill Chris Dunn and they grill him in the sense of it feels like his expectation level is still at the same level of Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Otto and Wendell. And my expectation level for him has dropped significantly. And now I've been evaluating him in terms of, okay, I've basically come to the reality of he's not going to be a starter for this team. And it seems like the way that the Bulls front office has talked, that's not going to be the reality of the situation anymore. So I got to put it in terms of what is he going to do next year if he comes back and he's going to be your backup point guard. That's how I've been evaluating him. And maybe that's a weird way to do that, but that's kind of the way I've been looking at it over these last 6 weeks or so. I just want to throw some of these stats out here, and I get everything that people have been saying about him, and it hasn't looked great. But I would just say this. Since February 1st, Chris Dunn's assist-to-turnover ratio, Matt, is 3.08. He is the third best assist-to-turnover ratio on the Bulls. The only two other players with a better assist-to-turnover ratio is Ryan Arcidiacono and Shaq Harrison. Archie's got a 4.91, and Shaq Harrison's got a 4.5. So that's the only bad thing is like the two other point guards on this team have kind of outplayed Chris Dunn, which sucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
The two dudes that one signed a G League contract and the other signed a partially non-guaranteed contract, and you're getting outplayed by those two dudes. But at the same time, he's not really playing that bad. It's just the offensive production hasn't been there. The other thing that I would mention too is Chris Dunn's usage percentage is at an all-time low.
Yeah.
It's at 15.2% this year, or at least during this stretch it is. His usage percentage, 15.2%.
Dude, I mean, he took 13 shots combined over the two Pistons games Friday and Sunday.
Yeah, that's booty. But do you want him to take 13 to 15 shots a game? Like, are you looking to go back to that?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I don't want Chris Dunn taking more shots, considering his favorite shots are mid-range. You know, he has that favorite spot on the floor where it's sort of like the right corner of that, you know, right where the free throw line is. And he can knock down that shot, you know, about half the time. That's where he always is trying to get to on the floor. But no, I don't want Chris Dunn taking more shots. But when you talk about usage percentage, I mean, in an ideal world, the Bulls find themselves a point guard who can complement LaVine and Markkanen offensively, can find them their great spots to operate on the floor without turning the ball over. And, you know, kudos to Dunn for increasing his assist to turnover ratio recently, but he still struggles with entry passes. He still makes really poor decisions, and those poor decisions lead to turnovers plenty of times. And yeah, guess what? LaVine can do that too, but LaVine's giving you a whole lot more scoring than Chris Dunn is. So one is more easily forgivable than the other. And the other thing that you had just recently talked about when it comes to Chris Dunn, and credit to him for trying to shoot more threes and add that to his game, numbers-wise, it's not working. Like, you saw those Pistons guards sagging so far off of Chris Dunn when he was behind the three-point line over the weekend that it was laughable. Like, laughable. So that's what the Bulls need. A smart, competent point guard who can be a pass-first point guard to get LaVine and Markkanen their shots, do so intelligently while minimizing turnovers, and for the love of God, would be nice if they can, A, get to the free throw line themselves at times by attacking the basket, which Chris Dunn right now can't do, and knock down some threes to help the spacing, which right now Chris Dunn can't do.
Look, I'm not arguing that, man. I get it. Believe me. I'm not arguing that. As far as the starting position goes and who gets the starter minutes and what you need to do for next year, I'm just saying he hasn't been as bad as I think people are hammering for him for over the last 15 games. He really hasn't been. And I think the thing that's exposing him the most is he hasn't been as good of a defender as he was last year.
Very good point.
That's, I think, the biggest key. That's the biggest key of it all, is the dip in his offensive production has been exposed more because he hasn't been as good of a defender. And maybe that's because he's been playing in foul trouble, but because he hasn't been so dominant and such a beast on the defensive side of the ball, it's kind of exposed these other areas. But I'm going back and looking here. Since February 1st, he's the second most assists on the Bulls with 74. He's got the most steals on the Bulls with 20. I just read you the assist to turnover ratios, the third best on the Bulls. The three-point percentage for a dude that never took threes, realized that he's not as bad as I think people are making him out to be and look like over these last 6 weeks. That's just the case I'm making. I'm not saying he's a sure bet to be a starter next year, and that's clear. But he's certainly not as bad as I think people are judging him as over the last 15 games or so.
I mean, that's fair. It's fair to say that he's not as bad as how most Bulls fans are treating him right now. I think you could fairly make that argument. But to me, when you're talking about, all right, well, Chris Dunn's not our starting point guard. Does he and how does he fit into this team moving forward? Can he be our primary backup point guard? To me, I'm still not really in love with that idea, just because, as opposed to at the beginning of this season, when I thought that there was a ceiling for Dunn that he could still reach and show us that he hadn't shown us yet. Right now, I think the ceiling for Chris Dunn is pretty darn low based on what I've seen this year. And yes, the Bulls have to address the point guard spot this offseason. I would not be surprised if they address it in the draft and in free agency, depending on where they end up in that lottery standing, because that's how badly they need help at the position. But does Chris Dunn really excite you as a guy who is going to run your second unit offensively? Because we've even started to see that. We have seen Jim Boylan stagger Chris Dunn to play some of his minutes with the first unit and some of his units with the second unit. And, you know, Boylan has his reasons that he has given to the media for that I think are in part to try to protect Chris Dunn's feelings. But also, Boylan is realizing that, you know, we just had a conversation, one of our shows last week, about the Bulls and their analytics department and how, you know, maybe it is or is not up to snuff compared to the rest of the league. But the best offensive numbers for the Bulls over this month stretch where they have been playing better is not with Chris Dunn as a part of that starting five of Rolo, Markkanen, Otto, and LaVine, but Archie. And that is crazy and laughable in some ways when you think about where Archie came from compared to Chris Dunn being a former number five overall pick and Archie being just like a G League nobody and the ghost of Kirk Heinrich. Like, that is the reality of the situation. So I don't even necessarily have a great deal of confidence in Chris Dunn being the guy to run my team's second unit offensively, given the same limitations that we are talking about right now.
That's why I'm just like, there's something more there, and I don't know what it is, and a lot of people don't know what's going on with him, and maybe it's a case of just has completely lost his confidence and his swagger. And like we've said for a long time now, I think it's been about 2 months since we've talked about Chris Dunn. It's like, timetable is shortened too, and the money is going to be a factor this summer, and it's clear too. And I'm with you on this, and I'm with every Bulls fan has said it. The Bulls are going to address who's going to start this summer, and they're going to go out and get a different point guard, whether that's the draft or free agency. Somebody's going to be different in that starting unit come opening day next year as far as the point guard situation goes. It's a matter of what they're going to do in that second unit, whether Chris Dunn's going to be that guy or they're going to look to move on or they're going to make it an open battle. So, but I just wanted to make that mention is I think since that slump and since February 1st has hit, Chris Dunn has played better, although the offense hasn't shown it in the box score. His points and all of that hasn't shown it necessarily. He's been better. He's been better than I think people have given him credit for. It's just, it hasn't been at the level that I think people have put his expectations there. And that's why I went back to that question that I asked you. Have we lowered our expectations for what Chris Dunn is supposed to be? I've lowered my expectations for him, and that started a while back. I'm wondering if Bulls fans out there have lowered their expectations of what they're watching night in and night out for him, or if they still have their expectations level set where Lowry, Zach, Wendell, Otto, et cetera, are at still. So that's a curious question. I wonder, hit us up 331-979-1369. I'd love to hear from you. Hit us up on Twitter too, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Matt, the last thing I've got for you, I've got a weird stat for you. This comes from NBA Advanced Stats. So I was digging through and I was just trying to find weird stats from guys off the bench, Bulls players specifically. I found one on Shaq Harrison on Friday. Shaq Harrison is leading the NBA in the fastest defensive player this season. So in speed and distance, the NBA tracks how fast a player is on both the offense and the defensive side of the ball. So it counts on average guys who are sprinting, jogging, standing, and walking. And so they calculate that by distance traveled over the course of the minutes played. So Shaq Harrison, in the 60-plus games that he's played in this season and the tracking system that the NBA uses, on average, defensive speed is 4.48 miles per hour, and that's the fastest defensive player in the NBA this season. Isn't that crazy?
I mean, we see it. We see it at times when Shaq just shows us his explosive speed. Sometimes it's making you know, a really smart heads up play on a on the defensive end, or when there's a loose ball situation. And sometimes it's when he is putting the ball on the floor, blowing by everybody and getting up for a dunk that you don't think the little shouty can make. But there he goes. And like, you know, so in one way, yeah, the stat is a little surprising, considering we don't think of Shaq Harrison as you know, necessarily being a guy who's going to be leading the league in any kind of statistical categories. But the evidence is there. There is no debating that Shaq Harrison is fast as all hell. Now, when it comes to those little, you know, not big picture, you know, stats and attributes for NBA players, but the little like fringe stuff like that, is it enough to prove yourself and to find yourself a steady permanent home in the NBA as a journeyman role player? With Shaq, I think that opportunity is there. I don't think he's going to be a priority for the Bulls this offseason. Matter of fact, I think we'll probably see him move on. And again, it's because, yeah, I'm sure Boylan loves his aggression and quickness on the defensive end and his ability to disrupt. If I'm not mistaken, he's also somewhere very near the top in deflections across the NBA this season, which is another kind of random out there stat. But I'm sure one that Jim Grit and Toughness Boylan loves to death. But he brings you so little on the offensive end. Whereas, you know, you were just talking about earlier comparing Archie and his three-point shooting struggles this season compared to Chris Dunn. Yeah, that's true. Shaq Harrison can also not make a three to save his life, much like Archie. But Archie is more of a distributor and can create looks for his teammates a lot better than Shaq can. And Archie can even operate and find open looks for himself using the spacing on the floor and having a pretty decent mid-range game and moments where he can attack the basket. He's not getting up for dunks, but Archie sees those opportunities where he can lay in a quick two using a Rolo screen or whatever it is. Archie has that, and Shaq Harrison doesn't. So when you're talking about some of these, you know, plethora of backup guards, and, you know, I feel like that's been a story several years now with this Bulls team, is trying to figure out who among the huge rotation and carousel of backup guards on this roster and all of the turnover that's existed are the most useful. Archie can do multiple things that Shaq Harrison can't do. I am impressed by some of the things that we see from Shaq, but that that level of impress only goes so far, and I would not be, you know, I would not be expecting the Bulls to make him a priority this offseason.
Yeah, neither would I, but I would certainly expect him to be on some NBA roster come this summer. He's done enough, I think.
Yeah, I think he's certainly proved that he can play some scrappy role off the bench for a different
Agreed.
Team.
Totally agree. And you were right about the deflections. Deflections per 36 minutes, according to NBA stats. Shaq Harrison is number two in the NBA deflections per 36 minutes. He's averaging 4 per game. So second
there
among leaders. And he's also tied for fourth in the NBA among all leaders. He's tied for fourth with 1.9 loose ball recoveries per 36 minutes in the NBA. So Shaq Harrison just across the board, wiping it clean with all of the hustle leader stats. So that's pretty funny.
Yeah, I think he's going to get multiple trophies from Jim Boylan at the end of the season.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. Drop us your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us. We're doing mailbag on Wednesday, so hit us up there. Drop your voicemails, your text messages, anything you got for us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com